This is Coach Lee, and you're listening to The Door Report.
At Vanderbilt, it's Tim Corbin and the Vandy Boys, Jerry Stackhouse on the hardwood, and Clark Lee on the gridiron. Nashville, it's time to sit back, relax, grab a cold one, and enjoy the show. The Music City is our stage, and West End is where we rock. You're listening to The Door Report, the premier Vanderbilt podcast for fans who bleed black and gold. Commodore Nation, anchor down.
Welcome back into The Door Report, episode 254 on a lovely, wow, I did not update the date on my sheet here, on a lovely Thursday evening, January 4th, 2024. I am Will Byram, joined as always by my loyal co-host, Trevor Hewlin. Happy 2024.
Happy Commodore 2024, Nation. Boys and girls.
Happy New Year. 2024 is off to a bang. A lot of weird shit going on. That's the only word I can use and the only way I can describe it so far in personal life, in the general world. A lot of weird shit going on in 2024 already. But here at The Door Report, we are powered by Corey Perkins of Parks Realty. If you're a first-time home buyer or looking to move homes in the Nashville area, Corey Perkins is your man. You can reach out to Corey via phone call or text at 615-967-8623, or you can reach out to Corey via email at coreyperkins@realtracks.com. Realtracks spelled realtracs.com. Trevor, we're back, baby.
Back like we never left.
We're back, baby. Last week, TDR took the week off. The people were upset.
God forbid we have a week off. God forbid we have a week to ourselves.
The people said we lacked grit. In a way, it was hard to argue with them. So I put 100% of the blame on Trevor.
Because it was my fault.
Because yes. I know he's strong enough to take it. However, there was zero argument from me whatsoever. As there's a ding in the recording here. I don't know if you'll be able to hear that.
There's a call incoming from my mother.
Ah. Just going to ignore it?
I think everything's okay. Should I answer it?
If she calls again,
then I'll be like, something's up.
Something, yeah. Let's hope there's not a second.
But it was my fault. I was visiting my girlfriend's family in the great white north of northern Pennsylvania. And by God almighty, was it cold.
Cold? How was the trip? Fantastic?
It was wonderful. It was wonderful. Went to Pittsburgh. Very blue-collar town. I actually liked it. I could see myself living in Pittsburgh. My girlfriend was like, no, you can't. You would hate it here. It's cold and gloomy. I'm like, but I like the cold and gloomy.
The family liked you?
I think they did.
That's very positive.
I did. Funny story. I really goofed up. I was going to meet her aunts and uncles. I walked in. They're in Pittsburgh. Big Steelers family. I walk in with my Eagles hat on. As soon as I enter the door, her uncle goes, you have the, he was joking, obviously. We were going back and forth. He goes, you have the audacity to wear an Eagles hat in my home. First time I meet you. I was like, yeah. It's like, hey, we formed a team back in the 40s. We used to be buddies. And then during brunch, I made the ultimate mistake of saying I preferred Hunt's over Heinz ketchup. And hindsight 2020, bad look for me. Bad look for
other
me.
Than that, yeah, those are two.
Other than that, it was great. Other than that, it was fantastic.
Other than that, it's fantastic. We have the dichotomy of man here right now on TDR. that might be what we call this episode because it is going to be a little bit brief.
The little banner says, what is there to talk about?
What is there to talk about? I don't know. Me and Trevor's personal life, a little bit of Vanderbilt sports, but here on episode 254, I would say it's beefy. It's not. Trevor's got somewhere to be at, what, 6:30?
Yeah.
So this should be about a 30, 45 minute episode. We'll see. We say that now. Trevor might be late to wherever he needs to be. But on episode 254, we already said it. Happy New Year, everyone. Just want to reiterate that. Turn over a new leaf. this past year of Vanderbilt sports is officially over. The book is closed. Time to turn the page and pray to God it doesn't get worse. I was trying to think of a positive way to phrase that, but there is no positive way to phrase that.
Our Father in heaven, please deliver us from evil. That is Vanderbilt Athletics.
Please, please save me, Donald Trump.
Please, Donald Trump. I need you. I'm in a drive-thru of a Dunkin' Donuts. Donald Trump, please save me.
Please save me, Donald Trump. But here on episode 254, we're going to discuss a little bit about college football bowl season and how much me and Trevor have actually consumed and give a few thoughts on how to fix college football. And specifically this time of year in college football, we're now past bowl season. All we have left is the national championship on Monday night. The college football playoff games were fantastic.
Yeah.
But the rest of bowl season in general was an unmitigated disaster.
Yep.
It was meaningless. I don't know what the viewership numbers were, but I cannot imagine they were very high across these games, because this is the least college football I've ever watched in bowl season.
Same.
I watched a few specific matchups, but I was not turning on the random matchups.
No.
Like I usually do. Some of that might have to do with how over this college football season I am with what I witnessed.
Yeah.
The Vanderbilt Commodores do, but Vanderbilt women's basketball, we will touch briefly. Shea Ralph is rolling.
Mm-hmm.
We will recap Vanderbilt basketball's non-conference slate that we witnessed them go 5-8 during. Should be a very fun recap. And we will preview the SEC basketball season, the SEC basketball slate that is ahead of the 5-8 Vanderbilt Commodores with Alabama coming up on the schedule. But before we get into all of that and much more, don't forget to follow us on Twitter and Instagram at The Door Report. Like us on Facebook. Subscribe to our YouTube channel. Our podcast is available on iTunes, Spotify, and Google Podcasts. And while you're at it, give our podcast 5 stars and a review on iTunes. It's now time for segment one.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
All right, Trevor. Time to get into this fantastically fun episode 254 with so much to discuss going on in the world of Vanderbilt athletics and a joyous ride of basketball season we have experienced thus far. But before we get into basketball, teased it a little bit in the intro. How much have you actually consumed of bowl games this bowl season?
I've watched 3 bowl games. I watched the Tennessee-Iowa game in the Cheez-It Bowl, and I watched the 2 national title playoffs. I've never watched this little bowl season football in my entire life. I've only watched 3 games. I didn't even watch the Pop-Tart Bowl.
Yeah, those are the only 3 games that I watched more than a full half. I watched the entirety of the college football playoff games, and I watched 3/4 of the Tennessee-Iowa game before it got out of hand, or right when it got out of hand. Other than that, it's hard to get into these games because every single team, pretty much, is not at full capacity. They're not at full strength. You're not actually seeing these teams play other talented teams other conferences. You're not getting to actually judge. You didn't get to truly judge Florida State. Mm-hmm. It's all with an asterisk next to it.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of reasons.
I mean, Ohio State only scored 3 points against Mizzou?
Yeah. There is so much wrong with college football, and bowl season is just a symptom right now of all the things that are wrong. There's so much wrong with the transfer portal. Excuse me. so much wrong with the NCAA, so much wrong with how the NIL incentives and things are set up. But bowl season is a disaster. Yes. It used to be, I remember, a much bigger deal to just, and I know the Rose Bowl is part of the college football playoff this year, but
yeah,
it used to be a much bigger deal to be in a specific bowl game, to be in the Music City Bowl and win the Music City Bowl kind of meant something, even if it is dumb.
Yeah.
Like to win the Sugar Bowl meant something, to win the Rose Bowl specifically meant something.
I used to be so into bowl season. Like, it would be like a Wednesday night at 9 o'clock, and I would watch like the Bad Boy Mowers Bowl against Idaho versus Boise State. It would be like Idaho versus Hawaii in the Bad Boy Mowers Bowl. I'd be like, dude, I'm sitting down to watch this.
Yeah, and I think it was the clip. Was it Boise State beating Oklahoma in 2007? I could be wrong.
Oh my gosh, the iconic statue of Liberty.
That wasn't for a natty.
The Tostitos salsa.
Yeah, that wasn't for a natty. Mm-hmm. That was just for the Tostitos Bowl. That was for the Fiesta Bowl. That was for that bowl game, and we remember it iconically because both teams were playing at full strength. It was very rare and specific to see a guy sitting out of a bowl game.
Yeah.
It was, this guy is a first round draft pick, defensive lineman, guaranteed book it.
And a lot of those guys still didn't sit out.
A lot of them still played, but it was like, I can follow that logic as to why you wouldn't play your team 7-5 playing 6-6 Florida.
Yeah.
Like, who cares about this game? I understand that, but it wasn't just guys sitting out because they're going to be a starter next season or they're going to transfer out of the program. And so I think that that's an issue, number one. Number two is, how do you fix it? That's a much more complicated answer than just pointing out the problems. I see a lot of people pointing out the problems. I don't see a lot of people handing out tangible answers. Like, Kirby Smart pointed out the problem.
Yeah.
He handed out zero answers of how to fix the problem, mm-hmm. besides being like, you should take pride in these games. Like, that's not going to fix it. I think how you fix it, and this is my number one point as to why I even brought up this topic, and then I'll ask if you have any solutions. The branding of these bowl games, the quality of them is gone. The historical meaningfulness of these bowl games is gone. You eliminated that completely. You also added in, when you created a 12-game college football schedule versus previously it was 11, you added in a lot of meaningless, mediocre teams into the bowl season. Over 50% of college football teams make a bowl. At the FBS level, there are a lot of bowl games. There's a lot of games that aren't going to be entertaining to watch, but you have to get creative with how you market these games. Like, I heard, especially when Barstool first started sponsoring, what is it, the Arizona Bowl?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There was a lot of pushback. And I was like, bowl season is supposed to be a celebration, a reward for these teams and fan bases to go do something fun and compete in a fun football game that's not necessarily tied into the regular season. And somehow there's pushback against fun experiences. I guarantee when a college football team full of college students hears that they're going to play in the Barstool Bowl game versus, what did you say, the Daddy Mowers.
Oh, like, Bad Boy
there
Mowers.
There we go. Bad Boy Mowers versus
or the Gasparilla Bowl. Yeah. You remember that?
Like, I guarantee those guys are like, oh, hell, we're going to go play in the Barstool Arizona Bowl, Portnoy, Frank the Tank, fucking Barstool Big Cat.
Yeah.
They're going to be there. That's awesome. That's a reward. We're going to meet them. It's going to be all over their sites. That's awesome. The Pop-Tart Bowl.
Yeah.
Dumb. Yeah. The dude had to be on so many drugs that pitched that to their head of marketing, but it was awesome.
Yeah.
There has to be more fun associated with these games. You've lost the seriousness of it through your incompetence. So now you have to pivot. And for some reason, there's resistance pivoting, even though we all know that bowl season and college football and college athletics in general is completely controlled by the TV networks now. Yeah. There's some still hesitance to change college athletics, even though it's already changed regardless. So,
yeah. Well, and two, we brought this up before the pod. Chris and Kyle Long, former NFL football players, have this podcast called the Greenlight Podcast. It's really good. And Chris brought up a really good point that the way in it sort of falls in line with your point with the way that college bowl games are marketed now. It's become so commercialized, and it always has been commercialized to an extent, but I feel like they've really like kicked it up a couple notches in the recent past couple of years. Chris brought up a great point. He goes, it's going to be 2042 and some kid is going to be walking down the halls of the USC football program and he's going to see the DirecTV bowl trophy and he's going to be like, what the hell is DirecTV? Like, you know what I mean?
So it's yes, the, it, that would be like yeah. The level, the meaninglessness of having brands attached to these bowl games.
Yeah.
Like having a DirecTV sponsorship. I understand they might have money. I understand that. But you have to view things long term.
Yeah.
That would be like having in 2003 a Blockbuster Bowl.
Yeah.
Or like a Hollywood Video Bowl. You have to have some sight that is not so short-sighted that you're just viewing the next 2 to 5 years. Mm-hmm. You have to view things in college sports for a 25 to 30 year mm-hmm. process. How is this going to evolve? And right now the path that is on is not a path that leads to more competitive and fun football games. It's a path that leads to more corporate sponsorships, more dollars maybe flowing in the short term, but in the long term you're ruining the competitive integrity of college football.
Yeah.
The other part of it is the biggest easy fix of all of this is stop handing out season awards before the end of college football postseason.
I agree with you. I think this is how you really fix it. I think this is a tangible step one into fixing this.
I understand that it has never been done this way. I understand that the Heisman is presented to the player that performed the best during the regular season, and that is how it has been done. But right now, anybody that tells you that Jaden Daniels would still have won the Heisman if they were voting on it and presenting it after the postseason, Michael Penix should have been the Heisman winner.
He would have finished third behind J.J. McCarthy. J.J. Yes. McCarthy would have come in second.
Michael Penix Jr. on a national stage stepped up, threw for 400-plus yards, won the game for his team, and didn't win the Heisman. Mm-hmm. The most iconic performance of the season for him was on the biggest stage, and it didn't matter in the Heisman voting. There's something wrong about that. Mm-hmm. But you wouldn't have wide receivers sitting out like Marvin Harrison Jr. for a bowl game if the Biletnikoff Award wasn't presented until after. And that was actually factored in. So it would change up the history of how these awards are presented, but it would immediately give players a second thought that are truly at that upper echelon of national award winners. Like, maybe I shouldn't sit out this game. Like, I want to win this award. Mm-hmm. These guys are competitors. If there's a reason to go out and play, they will go out and play. Right now, there's no incentive. There is zero incentive outside of negative incentive to go out and play in these games.
Yeah, I agree. And you brought up earlier, nobody's pointed out how to fix it. I wish I had an answer as to how to fix it, but I don't think that fixes it in totality, but I think that's a real step forward. Do you know what I mean? That's a real step forward into making change happen.
I mean, it's not going to change overnight. It wasn't destroyed overnight either. So it's not going to change overnight. And the 12-team playoff is only going to exacerbate this problem because you're going to have every team from 13 to 25 that's going to think they should have been in the 12-team playoff. It's going to make a Florida State situation happen over, and I know they're undefeated, but a Florida State type situation with fan bases, that's going to be even worse when this 12-team playoff comes out. I mean, we have a 68-team tournament in college basketball, and fan bases are still ready to riot when they don't make the last four in play-in games. So I don't know. This is a Vanderbilt podcast. Vanderbilt's not in bowl games. So
Vanderbilt was in one of those meaningless bowl games, dude, I'd be like, hey, all bowl games matter. I would be so deep in Shreveport right now. I would drink the city dry.
Put me in the bad boy mower.
Send me to the Gasparilla Bowl, baby.
The GoDaddy Bowl.
There's no way that's still a thing. It
used to be a thing, which is crazy.
Send me to the Idaho Potato Bowl.
But that's about all the college football talk I think we have, unless you have anything to add.
Dude, I'd even go back to the Liberty Bowl. Dude,
I'll go back to any bowl. Just get us to 6-6, and I will travel.
I will be in Memphis tomorrow.
Because on top of this, and before we go to basketball, this is the last thing, the transfer portal is also the biggest problem.
Yeah.
And there's not an easy fix to the transfer portal without eliminating the free transfer rule. That's the only way you can fix the transfer portal, because
how the schedule is timed out and how the semester schedule at colleges are, you can't push back the transfer portal window until after bowl games are done, because then the players don't have time to actually get enrolled at the, to actually look around and get enrolled at the school.
Classes are already starting.
Yeah, exactly. So it's not as simple as being like, we'll just wait to open up the transfer portal until after the whole season and postseason are over. It's not that easy, because supposedly, I know it's a joke, these guys are students.
Yeah.
They have to attend class. So I don't know how you fix that. And that's actually the main problem.
Yeah.
The NCAA bungled the entire name, image, and likeness situation and the transfer portal, and they basically broken it beyond repair. And so now it's just kind of the new college landscape we're living in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. To the point where like college coaches are being like, yo, we need Congress. As if Congress has ever actually stepped up and done anything for the American people. If they haven't done anything for us, I'm not really sure they're going to do anything for college football.
let's go to another out of touch body, and
maybe the most out of touch
that is run by walking dinosaurs and mummies.
Yes, just the most geriatric of folks.
You went from the geriatric NCAA to the geriatric-er.
Yes,
Congress.
You somehow get worse.
That I bet half of them don't even know what NIL stands for.
No.
So I don't know how you fix it.
I bet half of them are against even playing football.
We offered a couple solutions. Brand your bowl games better, make them fun experiences, and stop handing out season awards until after the full college football season is actually over.
Yeah.
That's a good step one, and it can be done instantly with very little change that has to happen to the overall scheduling of college football. But, Trevor, we have to give a shout-out to the Vanderbilt women's basketball team.
Dude, they're hooping.
And Shea Ralph, they are rolling.
Big game tonight.
13-1. Other than that, honestly, how much Vanderbilt women's basketball have you actually watched?
I haven't watched a single game.
Neither have I. I haven't watched second.
I have not watched 1 second of Vanderbilt women's basketball.
So that is not... I'm not trying to say that I've watched them and they're incredible, but I do want to give a shout out to that program and to that group of girls, to Shea Ralph, doing a fantastic job making the university look good and making Vanderbilt athletics look decent in a time when the men's basketball program and the football program seem to be completely incapable of doing that.
Yeah.
Vanderbilt women's basketball, 13-1. Vanderbilt men's basketball, 5-8. I think it's about time, Trevor, for a TDR cocktail break after that stat. And then we'll dig into
we're going to talk about Jerry Stackhouse.
Exactly, because we are about to recap the non-con play, go through the stats of non-conference play, and point out where Vanderbilt sits amongst its SEC friends. So grab yourself a cold one, and we will be right back for that fun adventure. Welcome back from the TDR cocktail break. I hope you have an ice cold beverage sitting next to you, whether it's a whiskey, whether it's an iced tea, whether it's an ice cold beer, an ice cold Diet Coke, or as Trevor has, some room temperature water. Whatever your drink of choice is.
I've been rocking with Nalgene's for a while. I've been drinking lukewarm, because these don't hold. I've been drinking lukewarm water for like 10 years now. I actually just bought a clean canteen, so I'm going to be enjoying cold, crisp water soon.
Nice. Trevor drinks out of a plastic Nalgene. I drink out of plastic water bottles. We are drinking so many microplastics. It's crazy. Our taints are actively shrinking in front of our eyes.
Microplastics make me big and strong. It's
turning the frogs gay.
I was talking with somebody the other day. They're like, aren't you afraid of like, because like we got in this like conversation. I was like, yeah, I buy my meat at the grocery store. Like, what grocery store? I'm like, well, I shop at Kroger. And they're like, well, aren't you afraid of all the hormones and like all the steroids they're pumping into like the cows and chickens? I'm like, no, I want the steroids. I'm trying to get big. I hope they're pumping my cows with so much Tren that I get just a little bit of it. And for every pound of ground beef I eat, please, USDA, keep pumping the cows full of steroids.
Look, we do have an obesity problem in America.
Yeah.
There are some problems with our food. It's very different than what they have in Europe. However, we are much fucking bigger than Europeans and every other country across the world almost.
I feel like if I just walked like around France, I feel like I would like, I think I'm Andre the Giant. I would walk around and be like, dude, nobody here is going to touch me. And they're always like, ooh, Europe's so dangerous. They carry knives and they try and like pickpocket you. If I was in France and I'd like look at this guy, I'm like, I dare this guy to pickpocket me. I'd look at him, his eyes and be like, I'd open up my pockets and be like, reach in there, bud. Go ahead. Grab it.
Yeah. Americans are also giant. So yeah. Let's figure out why we're tall as shit. Let's keep that part and let's eliminate the stuff that's making us giantly fat. Let's figure that out, US, before we worry about name, image, and likeness in Congress. Okay.
Yeah, let's get the food industry under control before we worry about
Let's figure
football.
That one out. Let's figure out the illegal immigration problem. Let's figure out inflation. Inflation. Yeah, you know, the impending corporate real estate crisis. Let's figure out those
things. Actually, TikTok is definitely listening to me because a TikTok came up on my For You page earlier. I was like, me and Will just talked about this last night.
Dude, if you just put a mic in front of us, like how Barstool does live streams, and you listen to some of me and Trevor's conversations, you would think we were giant conspiracy theorists. And it might be entertaining. It might also get us fired from both of our jobs. I'm not sure.
And we haven't said anything that bad.
No, nothing bad. Just like people would be like, what are these guys' problems?
They'd be like, there's definitely some loose screws in these guys' heads.
The bulbs need to be tightened because they're not so bright.
Well, I need one of those nice LED light bulbs. I got them old phosphorus ones in my head.
All right, Vanderbilt men's basketball is about to enter conference play. Non-con play is over. The easy schedule that Vanderbilt made themselves is over. And they went 5-8. Where do you think, Trevor? I think I asked you this before we started recording. Have you looked at KenPom or the net or anything like that recently?
I stopped looking at KenPom and net after the San Francisco loss.
So I was digging into this a little bit, and then we will run through the stats so far this season. Vanderbilt currently, well, I'll just tell you, the lowest ranked SEC team in KenPom outside of Vanderbilt is currently LSU. Okay. They're the only other SEC team that falls out of the top 100 of KenPom.
And where are they at?
106.
Oh.
Vanderbilt, the lowest team in the SEC.
We got to be in the 200s.
206.
Oh, my God.
And the KenPom ranking, this is the more disgusting part.
We're lower than 206?
KenPom is 206.
Oh!
But KenPom is 206. The NCAA net, Vanderbilt ranks number 268. There are 362 Division I college basketball teams.
Jeez.
Vanderbilt right now is a bottom 100 college basketball team, according to the NCAA net. And I can't really argue with them.
No.
They've had a little boost recently with a close game against Memphis and a dominant win over Dartmouth. And they're still sitting outside of the top 200. It is too late to turn the season around.
Yeah.
They're not going to go winless in SEC play. They're going to win a few games.
You think so?
I think I'm more confident in that than you.
I think we're staring a winless SEC season in the face.
I don't think it's that bad. I think Ezra has improved his game a lot. We'll get into that. I think Tyron is a talented enough player, and that can possibly happen. Mm-hmm. So I was about to say Colin Smith, but RIP to the Achilles. I think they will pick up a couple wins. I don't think LSU or Missouri are that good. I think there are opportunities for wins on the schedule. But regardless, it doesn't matter. When was the last time you were completely disinterested in a Vanderbilt basketball season before conference play began? Oh, I'm sorry. I'm also making a statement. You are disinterested right now, aren't you?
The last, I'll admit, I did watch the Memphis game. Mm-hmm. I watched a little bit of Dartmouth.
I didn't watch
because I was in a car.
Didn't watch a second of it.
I watched a little. I maybe watched 10 minutes of the Dartmouth game. The last time I was this disinterested, I don't think I've ever been.
My answer is never.
I've never been this disinterested.
I have always watched every single game. And up until the Dartmouth game, I had watched every single game this year as well.
I wasn't there. I didn't watch the San Fran game. I didn't watch a couple of games. Yeah.
So that I'm just done. Like, it's not a hatred towards Stackhouse. It's not a, like, I want him gone, but I think he's not a good college basketball coach. But it's not because I hate him so much or I want to make a statement. I truly am just like, this team's just not good.
Yeah.
There's no point in watching.
Yeah. And HMD on Twitter brought up a really good point. He's like, it's one thing to be angry. He's like, but once you get past the anger and you just slip into this sort of apathetic, I don't care mentality, he's like, that's when you're really gone. Whenever you got to the point where you're like, yeah, I don't care.
And I really,
that, he's like, that's when you're gone.
If you would have asked me 10 years ago, I know this was in 2013, so I would have been a, no, it would have been 2014. Wow, we're in 2024.
Gosh, I was a,
I would have been a
sophomore, junior.
I was a junior in high school.
So I would have been a junior, yeah.
If you would have told me in 10 years, you are going to be numb and uncaring about Vanderbilt basketball and they haven't even played their first SEC game.
Oh, I would have said you don't know me.
I would have laughed.
Yeah, I would have said you don't know who I am.
I would have laughed. But the apathy that this fan base has towards this basketball program is crazy. It's palpable. You can feel it. You can see it when you watch games on TV, when you see images from inside Memorial Gym. It's sad. It's so sad how far they have allowed this program to fall. And that is squarely on the shoulders of Malcolm Turner and Candace Story Lee.
Yeah.
It's not only on Candace Story Lee. Everybody, I bring it up almost every podcast. Everyone forgets Jerry Stackhouse was not a Candace Story Lee hire.
Yeah.
It's a Malcolm Turner hire. It was a buddy hire. Mm-hmm. And she just extended the contract. So it's on both of them. But you have to do something. You have to do something. You are losing the only program. Well, baseball. Baseball is a whole different world.
Yeah.
You're losing. You've already like the football fans are just broken. We've been broken. Our grandparents were broken. Yeah. Our grandfathers were broken.
Our great grandfathers were. Yeah. Well,
if they. There's some good.
They had some. They had some dogs out there. Dude. I don't think I would trade the life I have right now to go like be a fan during the Bill Wade era. Cause we have seen some good moments, but dang. Back in the '40s, the '30s, they had some boys out there. Some
dogs, brother.
Before they all got drafted to World War II.
But I know it, and this isn't maybe I don't want to go back there.
Maybe I kinda like the 21st. I'm not built for war.
Thanks, Oppenheimer.
Sometimes I do think about, like, what would I be like if I got drafted? I'm like, dude, I'd pop my head out of that trench and I'd be gone.
Yeah. Every time I think about that, I'm like, that's not going to happen. We'll be long dead from nuclear and hydrogen bomb explosions before I would ever be drafted.
Men used to go to war, and now they just whine on podcasts.
Yeah, now we just have a Vanderbilt sports podcast where we barely talk about Vanderbilt sports.
Maybe we should get drafted.
Please, just draft me. Give me a purpose in my life, for the love of God. But I know I mentioned at the beginning, right after the TDR cocktail break, about the rankings. And a lot of that might just sound like numbers. Like, LSU ranks number 106 in KenPom, and Vanderbilt ranks number 206. Like, what does that even mean? To some people, it just rolls right off their back. And I understand that. But just win-loss records. Vanderbilt is the only team in the entire SEC that has a losing record after non-con play. They're the only team with below a 60% win percentage. Vanderbilt's 5-8. There are three teams directly above Vanderbilt in the current standings. No SEC games played. Those three teams are 8-5. Missouri, LSU, and Alabama. And Vanderbilt starts off conference play with games against Alabama and LSU. So it's crazy to look across the conference and truly say Vanderbilt is, without a doubt, the worst program in the SEC and has been outside of last year for 5 out of the last 6 years. Is that about right? Out 7 out of the last 8. Yeah. They've been the worst program in the conference. Never thought that would be possible. The main difference in Vanderbilt is how easy their strength of schedule has been compared to teams like Alabama, who also went 8-5. So Vanderbilt, who is 5-8, I don't have their strength of schedule pulled up. I think it was in the 270s.
Yeah.
In the 270s strength of schedule. For example, Alabama's non-conference strength of schedule, 18th in the country. Their losses, number three in the KenPom Creighton, number 14 in the KenPom, no, number three in the KenPom Arizona, number 14 in the KenPom Creighton, number two in the KenPom Purdue, number 24 in the KenPom Clemson, number 31 in the KenPom Ohio State. Those are Alabama's losses.
Yeah.
There's a difference between what we have seen out of Vanderbilt and what we have seen out of every other SEC program. And the fact Jerry Stackhouse is still employed
is,
I think they fucked themselves with the contract. I'm starting to think
that was a legitimate contract.
I think they screwed up badly. I still think Jerry Stackhouse will be fired after this year, but that buyout has to be something because it can't be worse. I mean, I know they had a tight game against Memphis. I know they beat Dartmouth, but what we've seen this year has been almost unwatchable, yeah. And it's forced a lot of Vanderbilt fans into not watching. Let's get into the stats here, Trevor, as ESPN decides to reload. The leading scorer for the Commodores through the first 13 games, Ezra Manyone, 16.5 points per game, shooting over 40% from the three-point line. That's crazy. He's shot, what, 20% and then 25%, and now he's shooting 41% from the three-point line. Ezra Manyone has been the, outside of Jason Rivera-Torres, but returning player-wise, Ezra Manyone has been the complete lone bright spot on this team. He has been pretty much everything I expected.
Yeah. Maybe a little bit more.
Yeah, it is. He's shooting almost 90% from the free throw line. Anybody out there listening that's listened before, I love free throws. So if you shoot well from the free throw line, I'm going to respect you, because the only way you get good at shooting from the free throw line in game is by putting in the reps in an empty practice gym. And Ezra Manyone has clearly done that. So every criticism that I'm giving about this team has nothing to do with Ezra Manyone. Second leading scorer on Vanderbilt's team, Tyron Lawrence. Only played in 9 games so far, averaging 13.1 points per game, shooting under 40% from the field, shooting 72% from the free throw line, shooting 30% from the three-point line, averaging 2.1 turnovers per game and only 2.3 assists per game, almost a 1-to-1 ratio. What the hell is going on with Tyron Lawrence? Do you have any idea why he has looked the way he's looked?
No, I don't. I wish I did. I have no idea. He looks like he doesn't care.
I wish it was that simple. Like, you, in a way, I want it to be that simple. And like, he's just disinterested. Mm-hmm. But I don't think that's like,
yeah.
At my core, I don't think Tyron Lawrence is a guy that's just like, nah, who cares? Yeah. I'm just going to the NBA. I came back to Vanderbilt just to not care. Mm-hmm. I don't know what's going on. Is he out of shape? Was he not able to get in shape due to injury? Does he not like the scheme? Is he not getting along with Stackhouse? Is he struggling without size down low that's distracting the defense and having to keep help on the center? I don't know what it is, but he doesn't look like the same player. And unless that changes, you might be right. It might be an over in conference.
Yeah.
Don't know how you fix that. Vin Allen Lubin, third leading scorer, 10.9 points per game, 5.4 rebounds per game. Shooting over 50% from the field, 85% from the free throw line, 30% from the three-point line. He's actually – Vin Allen Lubin has actually looked pretty good.
He has looked really
good. In the limited time we have seen him, we've only seen him play in about half the games, playing 25 minutes a game when he's been available. He's been about what I expected. But as I said during the preview for basketball season, Vin Allen Lubin is not a five, and he's not a center. He's a four. And Jerry Stackhouse recruited him and planned on him playing the five. And that's Jerry Stackhouse's fault. He misevaluated Vin Allen Lubin and is going to have to misuse him the entire season because he has put himself in a corner by Lee Dort is gone. Mm-hmm. That's not on Jerry Stackhouse. But you have Carter Lang. That's it. That's the only other guy. I mean, you have Tassos, but Tassos is a 6'9" shooter.
Yeah.
He's
going to play on the perimeter.
Yeah, he is a perimeter guy. You already knew going into the year he's a perimeter guy. So Vin Allen Lubin has to play the five. Carter Lang is a freshman, unproven, leading the team in blocks. Somehow.
Yeah.
Leading the team in blocks. That's probably, no, that's what it says on ESPN, but he's not. That's probably just Vin Allen Lubin hasn't played enough games. Third leading scorer on the team, Evan Taylor, 9.1 points per game, shooting 28% from the three-point line.
I hate that guy.
28%.
I hate him so much.
Played in all 13 games. Shooting 28% from the three-point line.
I hate Evan Taylor.
Maybe he turns it around. Shooters can be streaky. Maybe he turns it around. So far, Evan Taylor has been undoubtedly, well, Tyron Lawrence has been disappointing, but he's been better. He hasn't been miserably unproductive.
Yeah.
He just hasn't been the superstar SEC player of the year that I think both me and you expected.
Evan Taylor continues to look lost on both sides of the court.
That's the main problem.
He looks confused.
Tyron Lawrence is a good rebounder, pretty solid defender. Tyron Lawrence is almost averaging 2 steals a game. Evan Taylor is a defensive liability, yeah. Not to the extent that Trey Thomas was last season, but if you're going to be that quality of defender at the 3 or 4, mm-hmm. you have to bring offensive production and knockdown shooting on the other end of the court. And if you're not doing that, you cannot be playing almost 30 minutes a game. Mm-hmm. You can't. So that's been a huge problem, is you just have a gigantic hole of zero offensive productivity, pretty much. Zero efficiency on the off. He's been very inefficient. He's the fourth leading scorer on the team, but very inefficient. And so until that changes, Vanderbilt's going to continue to struggle because they don't have the shooters to spread the floor to allow Ezra and Tyron to slash. Mm-hmm. So until that changes and Evan Taylor steps his shit up, this team's going to continue to suck. Because Colin Smith is no longer there to provide any threat on the outside. And it's not like Colin Smith was having an incredible year before the injury either. He was very disappointing mm-hmm. prior to the injury. Fifth leading scorer on the team. The only thing in the Vanderbilt basketball, well, not the only, one of the only things we were right about, Jason Rivera Torres.
Yeah.
He has been, as an incoming freshman, everything we expected and more. He is a dynamic offensive scorer. Provides decent defense, not a great defender, but he's a freshman, skinny, needs to put some weight on and develop that part of the game. But he can get to his spot and score. He's not shooting an incredible percentage, shooting 36-37% from the three-point line, 37% from the field overall. But the difficulty of the shots he is taking, they are one-on-one, off the dribble, difficult contested pull-ups, and he can get hot.
Yeah.
He is going to be a hell of a player.
Yeah, I really like his game. But then again, going to lose your coach. Portal's going to be there. Folks are going to come calling.
I don't think Jason Rivera Torres will leave.
Really?
No. Because Jason Rivera Torres, remember, is the guy that's an actor. And I think he is drawn to the fact that Nashville is in a market, in a city, in a marketable city.
That's
a big deal to him. He has a career outside of basketball that will probably be just as, if not more, lucrative than a basketball career would be.
That's a really good point.
If you can combine, I haven't even watched the show he's in. He could suck at acting for all I know.
But really popular.
I know it's
show,
popular. Yeah. I've just never watched it. If you can combine, because if there is one complaint I have in movies, this is why sports movies suck. No one that throws a football or baseball looks like they've ever thrown a football or baseball. And the most egregious sport in any movie ever almost is basketball.
Yeah.
It's every time it looks like these dudes are like, you could have just picked random guys from the YMCA shooting mm-hmm. around their 30 that would look better than this. So if you can combine actual basketball skill with actual acting, that's going to be more lucrative.
The only movie to where the actual basketball lined up was Hoosiers. I'm going to say Hoosiers, but it was because it was the 50s to where it's
incredible movie.
Yeah. Oh, the best basketball movie of all time. Maybe the best sports movie of all time, I think. But it's the 50s. So it's not like you just go up, dribble, dribble, dribble. Not with your palm, smacking the hell out of the ball. Pass, 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 shoot.
Is it? It's Uncut Gems, is what I thought you were about to say.
Oh, that's also great. Well, that's also too because they actually use clips from NBA games.
And then whatever the movie was, it was that what Anthony Edwards was in?
That was Hustle. That was Hustle.
That was also
another Adam Sandler.
That was a solid basketball movie.
Was it good?
Yeah, it was okay. I mean, for a basketball movie, because you had Anthony Edwards, who was actually a really good actor.
Yeah,
I was kind of shocked, but you actually had real looking basketball.
Yeah.
So we're getting real off track here, but sixth on the team, Colin Smith out for the remainder of the year. Heal up, Colin. That's a brutal injury. Mm-hmm. Heal up. Prayers and thoughts from TDR over here. Tasos Kamateros, tough guy to evaluate so far on the year, to be honest. Playing about 17 minutes a game, averaging just under 7 points per game, but shooting 44% from the three-point line. Let me repeat that. Tasos Kamateros is playing 17 minutes a game, shooting almost 45% from the three-point line, leading the team in three-point shooting percentage. And he's playing 17 minutes a game on a team that is shooting, let me check my stats here, 29% from the three-point line as a team. Jerry, how is Tasos not getting more minutes? Do you have an answer for why he's not playing more?
Is
the defense that much worse? Is the rebounding that much worse?
That all of us, everybody who watches Vanderbilt basketball has been asking for years now. Jerry, what is it with the rotations? What is it with the lineups? Like, what are we trying to accomplish here?
It also is not just in our heads. This is something I wanted to check before the podcast because I did not watch the Dartmouth game, but I watched pretty much every minute of all the previous 12 games, as miserable as it was. And it feels like Vanderbilt is just getting into their offense so late in the shot clock. And I'll run through the rest of these stats maybe in a second, but Vanderbilt is getting into their offense so late, and it feels like every possession is ending in a rushed bad shot or a turnover.
Yeah.
Vanderbilt's average possession length, 18.4 seconds, 299th in the country. Very slow pace of play.
Yeah, 1970 style basketball.
I don't understand, as a team who can't seem to get open shots, why you are not trying to utilize transition looks more and transition offense more. Get in transition with Ezra Mignon, your experienced, extremely fast, maybe the fastest point guard in the country. Get him out in transition with Tyron and Evan and Tasos and Vin Allen Lubin, Jason Rivera Torres. All of these guys scream fast pace of play guys.
Yeah.
Every single one of them. And for some reason, Vanderbilt is playing at one of the slowest tempos in the country and has one of the worst offenses in the country. It's right in front of
it
you.
Makes no
Maybe
sense.
I just don't know ball. Obviously, an 18-year NBA career, you must know something I don't.
I wonder what percentage of their points actually come in transition offense.
I wish I knew how to look that up.
I wish I did. That's somebody has to have that stat.
It feels like every other team, and this is across the country, not just in games Vanderbilt is in, and not a slight at Vanderbilt's defense, but every other team consistently picks up easy buckets in transition.
Yeah.
Offense created by defense over and over and over. It feels like Vanderbilt rarely does that. Vanderbilt rarely gets an easy bucket. Mm-hmm. Every single point they score feels like nails on a chalkboard.
Yeah.
It's amazing how difficult they make it look as a Power 5 Division 1 basketball program with Division 1 scholarship players. Mm-hmm. It is amazing how difficult Jerry Stackhouse and this roster make the game of basketball look.
Yeah.
They make it look impossible.
Yeah.
It's boring. It's an awful brand of basketball to watch, and it's not resulting in wins.
No.
It's kind of like watching the Derek Mason of football.
Yeah.
But without a good defense, because Vanderbilt's defense is actually worse than their offense statistically.
Yeah.
Everything is bad.
Make it make sense.
Make it make sense. So the bitch fest continues. Let's continue down this non-con. I'll go quicker through these guys underneath Tasos. Paul Lewis averaging 4 points a game. Isaiah West, 3.5 points per game. Carter Lang, 2.8 points per game. There's a lot of guys as you go down this list that just can't shoot. I mean, Paul Lewis supposed to be a shooter. He's not.
No.
It's a quick release. That's it. It looks kind of pretty coming off his hand. He's shooting 18%. No shooter shoots 18% through 13 games. Yeah, it doesn't happen. Hadn't put in the work in the offseason. Don't care what it says. Isaiah West, everybody was loving him. Don't see anything that stands out about him. I don't understand why people love his game. I'm not trying to shit on him, but I don't know why he's in the starting lineup. I don't understand it. He does nothing special. He's like a default 68 overall NBA 2K player. He's not very good at anything. He's not bad at any. He's either a jack of all trades or a master of none. And right now, as a freshman, he has time to develop. I think as a sophomore or junior, he can be a really good player. But he should not be on the court right now. He is not ready to be even a role rotation guy, much less a starter. And at some points during this non-con schedule, he has been a starter. I understand you've had injuries, but he is not that guy right now.
I thought early on you saw a little bit of flashes that made you made you raise your eyebrows. You're like, okay, this guy might be able to put some things together in the future. But he, and I'll add this too, I think he, and particularly Paul Lewis, has regressed. I mean, we didn't get to see a ton of him last year, but I mean, by God, Ezra and Paul Lewis on the floor together last year was electric basketball. It was fun basketball. He stinks. He's not good.
It's also hard when you have so many guys playing 8 to 10 minutes a game at the bottom here. None of these guys provide anything. They're just useless role players. I'm not meaning to sound so harsh, but guys like Jordan Williams, Malik Presley, Jaqueline Roberts, these guys provide nothing on offense. They're averaging under 2 points a game playing 9 to 10 minutes a game. They're averaging getting less than a bucket a game playing 1/4 of the game. Yeah. You can't have these offensive liabilities rotating in on a team that already struggles on offense. This is not a fault of anything that can be fixed in season. This is a fault of horrendous recruiting and not caring, being on the golf course too much and not putting in the time to build a competitive roster. Jerry Stackhouse has made a mockery of the Vanderbilt basketball program and stolen 5 years of money from the Vanderbilt athletics program.
Yep.
He's run this program further into the ground after Bryce Drew, I thought, had already done irreparable damage.
Yeah.
Somehow Jerry Stackhouse has driven the Vanderbilt basketball brand into complete irrelevance.
Yep.
Vanderbilt basketball used to have relevance on the national stage.
Used to be a premier basketball.
They used
team to
be known. Oh, Vanderbilt, they have a good basketball program. That is not even a thought in people's minds anymore. It's Vanderbilt. Yeah, they suck at everything but baseball and women's bowling.
Yep.
Jerry, you did that. Thank you. Partially Bryce Drew's fault, partially Jerry Stackhouse's fault. There's plenty of blame to go around because the team sucks ass. That's my opinion of what I've seen so far.
I'll second that.
Very artistic and articulate way to put that. But, Trevor, you have anything else before we close out this brief and ADHD episode of TDR?
Nope.
Well, everyone out there listening, we're back. All you complainers out there, thank you. We appreciated the comments. Continue
back
to make,
on our back on our grind set.
But don't worry, we're back. The gridosterone levels have been raised. We needed a week off after what we witnessed during 2023, but we're going to be back and better than ever. I want to tease it right now. Next week, I think we will be doing kind of a full recap of the Vanderbilt football signing class. So the transfer class. The guys coming in, we want to be able to actually put in time, evaluate these guys, and not just read off the description on 24/7. I want to be able to go actually watch some highlights, whether it's huddle highlights or I'm watching actual college highlights from these transfers in. I want to be able to give my actual opinion. So next week should be an entertaining episode. But for myself, Will Byram, and my sad, no, he's actually happy right now. For my happy co-host, Trevor Hewlin, this has been episode 254 of The Door Report, powered by Corey Perkins of Parks Realty.